Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
Previously in Deathstalker Legacy.
Tell your master that the elves will work with the Tyrande on this occasion to destroy the Paragons once and for all.
You now have the entire route in advance, along with certain carefully worked out blind spots where you can conceal yourselves and wail. The Paragons won't be expecting a mass Esper onslaught.
And now the Paragons have dealt the elves a blow from which they will never recover. All honor to Finn Durandal!
I will be champion. I will be king. You support me when I need it, and I promise you access to the Madness Maze.
We have watched you with interest, Sir Durandal. Come inside and we will discuss this further.
Jazz. We can't do this. We can't. Douglas is my friend. Anne, what are you doing here?
How could you?
Anne.
Shut up, Lewis. Jazz doesn't matter now. The terror has finally arrived.
There is one weapon that might prove useful against the terror, should you wish to make use of it.
The maze. We're talking about the Madness Maze.
It seems to me there is one obvious answer to the threat of the terror that has not been touched on yet. Owen Deathstalker must return to save us all, as he did before.
I've not been well.
Don't whine, Brett. Go and find Rose right now. And when you've located her, don't let her out of your sight again.
Lewis is on his way out. He's going to fall. And he's going to fall fast.
Oh God, Lewis. What has Jess done to you? You used to have more sense.
I just wanted to be happy for once.
And to hell with what it cost everyone else?
Love's a bitch sometimes.
Oh sure. It's not your fault. It never is. The universe just pushed you right into bed.
I won't be at the wedding. I don't think I'll be coming back. Let Douglas and Jessamine have their life together.
I would have died for you, Douglas. And now, I'll dance on your grave.
Graphic Audio presents Simon R. Green's Deathstalker Legacy. Narrated by Richard Rowan.
With performances by Michael Glenn, David Coyne, Vanessa Benjamin, Sonny Lasky, Corey James, Nanette Savard, Terrence Aselford, Colleen Delaney, James Konacek, Chris Rowan, and Tim Carlin.
Directed and adapted for Graphic Audio by Richard Rowan.
Episode 6, The Better Part of Valor. Douglas Campbell, King and Speaker of the Empire, did what he always did when he was lost and confused and needed to find his way again. He went home. All the way home. Back to the old manor house in the country where he'd been raised as a child. Far away from the city, far away from anywhere, House Campbell stood alone in its extensive grounds and gardens, home and sanctuary to generations of Campbells down the many centuries. Douglas's father, William, had retired there after he gave up the crown, to putter around his gardens and play at being the historian he'd always fancied himself. He seemed happy enough to hear his son was coming to visit. Douglas hadn't told him why he was coming. Truth be told, he wasn't entirely sure. Mostly, he just needed to get away from all the noise, from all the decisions he had to make, from all the people so desperate to get his attention. Douglas wanted somewhere he could escape from the pressures for a while, somewhere he could think in peace.
Home.
He piloted the flyer himself, taking neither an official pilot or a bodyguard. Just him and the flyer, alone in the sky.
The many confidants and advisors, and most definitely among them, had blown their collective stack when he informed them bluntly of his intentions, but he refused to be browbeaten into changing his mind and doing the sensible thing. He'd been a paragon a hell of a lot longer than he'd been king, and he was quite capable of looking after himself for a while. Besides, the flyer had its own guns and force shields, and so many computers it practically flew itself. It took Douglas over an hour to reach the old manor house, even flying at top speed in an air lane reserved exclusively for him. Douglas didn't mind. It gave him time to relax properly, and he enjoyed looking down at the passing scenery. Logris was still a bright and glorious world, away from the sprawling cities, full of beautiful vistas and grand rolling views. It occurred to him that this was the real Logris, the real homeworld of Empire, not the overcrowded warrens of the cities, which were indeed packed full of marvels and wonders and sights to please the eye and astound the heart. But sometimes, you could have too much of a good thing. Douglas landed easily on the private landing pad at the boundary of the family property, and after he'd powered down the systems and disembarked, he spent some time just standing on the edge of the pad and looking out over the expertly landscaped ground stretching away before him. It seemed to him that the gardens had never looked so beautiful. He tried not to see the armed and armored guards silently patrolling the perimeter. He knew they were necessary. Even though William was no longer king, he was still a target for all kinds of hate groups. The elves, the Shadow Court, and many other terrorists and scumbags would just love to get their hands on William, for ransom or revenge, or just to put pressure on the current king. So the guards were necessary. Douglas knew that. But still, they detracted from his happy childhood memories of his old home, so he did his best to ignore them. The gardens were breathtaking at this time of the year, blooming even though it was midwinter everywhere else, thanks to some clever programming of the weather control satellites. Rank, even retired rank, had its privileges. The great green lawns, expertly cropped and shaped, stretched away before him for miles, immaculately laid out. There were low hedges and peaceful walkways lined with rows of trees, and marvelous flower beds blazing with colors, like so many rainbows fallen to the earth, all planned and maintained with almost ruthless geometric precision. The flowers came from dozens of worlds, nurtured and protected by a whole cadre of specially trained technicians, for whom gardener was really too limiting a word. The trees had come from all across the Empire, carefully transplanted and preserved. Some no longer existed outside these gardens. There were artificial lakes brimming with all kinds of decorative life, tumbling streams crossed by delicately carved wooden bridges. And not far from the center of the garden, there was a great hedge maze of cunning design. Douglas got lost in it once, when he was a small child. He'd been forbidden to enter it on his own, so of course he did. He was that kind of child. Eventually, his increasingly tearful cries led his family to him. He still had nightmares about the maze sometimes, though he never told anyone that. Whenever he came home, he always made it a point to walk through the maze from end to end, in and out, just to prove to himself that it no longer had any control over him. Except, of course, if it hadn't, he wouldn't have needed to do it every damned visit. Douglas was smart enough to know that, but he did it anyway, because. He sometimes wondered if this was why he had such ambivalent feelings about the Madness Maze. He hoped not. He'd hate to think his subconscious was that petty, and indeed that obvious. He left the landing pad behind him and walked off into the gardens, following the neat gravel paths when he felt like it, and wandering defiantly across the open lawns when he didn't. There was no one to tell him not to anymore. He was the king. The sky was a clear, clear blue, with hardly a cloud in sight, and the air was full of the scent of blooming flowers and fresh-cut grass, of rich, wet turf and growing things. Such a peaceful place, whose only movement was the slow turning of the seasons that even the weather control could only soothe, not interfere with. Somewhere off in the distance, Douglas could hear the slow, mournful cries of the peacocks calling to each other. He walked on, taking his time, strolled down a shadowy tunnel of inward-leaning trees, and was suddenly struck by a nostalgia so overwhelming it was almost painful. He knew every inch of these gardens. When he'd been a child, they'd been his whole world. He hadn't known there was another, harsher world outside it, and wouldn't have cared if he had.
Mother and father kept my duty and my destiny from me as long as they could. They wanted me to enjoy my childhood.
He crossed an old stone bridge, so artfully constructed it didn't need mortar to hold the stones together. The stream beneath him was stocked with every kind of fish a fisherman might desire. Unless you wanted one of the big bastards, the kind that fight back, in which case there was an ocean only half an hour or so away. There were animals in the garden too, but they were there to be petted and enjoyed, not chased or hunted. The gardens were a place of peace, of contemplation. Everything in its place, so nothing ever changed. The gardens had been carefully planned so that the seams were never visible, designed and laid out centuries ago, long before even Lionstone's time, by a master landscaper who knew he'd never live long enough to see it all come into its final glory. The Campbell who'd ordered the garden had known the same thing, but hadn't cared. It was for his family. The Campbells took the long view in those days, when they thought Clan Campbell was forever, and nothing would ever change. And now the old empire was thrown down. The old ways had been put aside. But the gardens still flourished. Clan Campbell was not what it had once been, but that was probably a good thing. Douglas walked through the ancient gardens and thought dark thoughts about the impermanence of man and his plans. Man could disappear tomorrow, and the gardens would survive quite happily without him. Though, of course, there'd be no one to grieve, as the gardens went slowly to the wild and lost their artificially maintained beauty. Finally, he came to the very center of the gardens, ignoring the hedge maze for now, and there was his brother James's grave. It was a simple affair, just a basic stone with James's name on it to mark his final resting place, topped with a flame that always burned and always would. Brother James, the man who should have been king. One brother stood and looked down at another and envied him his peaceful sleep, while off to one side their father looked on, waiting as requested. When James died his sudden, stupid, and entirely unexpected death, public sentiment and the media had called loudly for him to be laid to rest in the old Campbell mausoleum, along with generations of the Campbell dead, right in the heart of the Parade of the Endless. Some even called for James to have a special place in the cathedral, but William and Niamh said no. He was their son, so they brought him home, so he could sleep in a familiar place. Douglas looked about him. It was a nice location, calm and peaceful, on the side of a gently sloping hill looking out over the placid waters of an artificial lake. For a while, visitors were allowed, as long as they made a donation to charity, but eventually William and Niamh put a stop to that when the visiting crowds threatened to turn his grave into a shrine. The ever-burning flame was enough. He was their son. He belonged to them, and no one else. Niamh was buried there now, sleeping beside her son, as she'd wanted. When the time came, William would join them, and Douglas thought that perhaps he would like to rest here as well. He'd seen the old Clan Campbell mausoleum, where Crawford and Emily and all the other great names of the family had been interred, and the grim, cold sepulcher had struck Douglas as a cold and joyless place to spend eternity. Robert and Constance had changed that tradition, as they changed so many others. They'd left strict instructions for their bodies to be cremated and the ashes scattered over the gardens. They might have turned people they'd known into legends, but they had no wish to be revered or venerated themselves. Douglas liked to think that a few last particles of his grandfather and grandmother were still blowing about the gardens. When he was younger, he'd walk around taking great deep breaths, hoping to breathe some of them in, so that he would be great too. William and Niamh had explained duty and destiny to him by then, and he'd understood just enough to feel distinctly scared and unworthy.
"Are you going to stand there brooding all day, son? I was under the impression you'd come all this way to talk to me. The word urgent was used quite a lot, as I recall."
"Sorry, Dad. I've had a lot on my mind just recently."
"I can imagine. Which of your many appalling problems brings you home this time?"
Douglas looked at his father. The old man actually looked better for having retired. Not nearly so fragile. He was standing straighter, and his eyes seemed sharp and alert. He was wearing old comfortable clothes, crumpled and grubby, of the kind Niamh would never have let him get away with.
You tried to warn me about being king, and as usual, I didn't listen. I don't feel up to the job, Father.
No one ever does. I spent most of my reign convinced that any day now the house would wake up and realize I wasn't anything like the king my father was, and would demand I give up the crown so they could give it to someone better qualified. You're doing well enough, son. I keep up with the news. The Neumann riot was a mess, but you did well to take out so many elves at the Parade of the Paragons.
He fixed Douglas with a stern gaze.
Though, I have to say, I'm still wondering just what you had to promise the Oversoul in return for their help in suppressing the Neumann rioters. The Espers never do anything for free.
They didn't ask for anything specific. Just asked for my goodwill. I allowed them to be involved in taking down the elves at the parade. Whether that'll be enough, we'll just have to wait and see. Dad, we need to talk about the Terror.
William turned away and looked out over the gardens.
It's very peaceful here, far away from all the troubles of the world. I'm glad you're king now, Douglas, and not me. I wouldn't know what to do. Probably just sit on my throne and dither, hoping someone else would come up with a plan. Whatever you decide to do, it's bound to be better than anything I could suggest.
He turned back to face Douglas.
You have to have faith in your judgment. I do. I raised you to be a warrior, boy, and you have never disappointed me. You're doing a good job, Douglas. You are every inch the king your mother and I always hoped you'd be.
Douglas was touched. He put out his hands to his father, and William held them tightly. And after that, Douglas couldn't bring himself to discuss his other problem, Jessamine and Lewis, the real reason he'd come all this way. It would have seemed so petty. So Douglas walked with his father through the gardens, talking of other things, and later they had a good dinner together. When evening finally fell, Douglas gave his father a hug and then flew back to the city and his throne, leaving peace and contentment behind to take up the burden of his duty once again, because every child has to leave home eventually to become a man.